Today, the art of investing. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today I'm joined by Kerry Stevenson, who is GIAC, but actually is very importantly not a professional investment advisor. So hello Kerry, good to see you, and let's just explain what GIAC actually is.
I love it. I love the way you say that. Well, Martin, thank you so much. Great to see you as always. It's the Gold and Alternative Investments Conference. That's what GIAC is. And clearly I'm going to have to turn it into the VRC, which is the Virtual Gold Conference going forward.
Right. But the point is, you've had a very active interest in investment for many, many a year. And you've got a series of different contexts within which you discuss your experience and share it with other people. And so there's a bit of a learning environment that you've created. And what I'd like to do is to pick your brains a bit, really, about, you know, what is the art of investing? Because there is much more to it than just pure mathematics, isn't there?
Well, I think the art of investing, first of all, is to start, I always say this to people, be resourceful, get educated and stop watching Netflix, because I think that the majority of people out there are literally asleep at the wheel. They think everything's going to be okay. And, you know, I love the value you give to people, because, you know, if people just read general news, you'd think everything's fine. You know, there's no problem at all. But when you dig deep, and what you do is you look at the data and the analytics, it's really important. And so my passion is to just get people to stop thinking everything's just going to be fine, everything's going to be fine, and to start educating themselves. And if I can do a little bit of that by, you know, I do a Facebook and an Instagram live every single day. And if it just piques a little bit of interest in them and makes them start to think for themselves instead of watching mainstream media, which will not tell them the real truth about what's going on, as you and I both know, then my job is partially done.
And I think that's a really important point, right? Because both you and I share a passion about education and empowerment, right? Because that's what this is really about. It's about saying, don't just take the first headline piece of information that you get and jump, right? Look below the surface, ask about the source of the information, ask perhaps about what the agenda of the person is who's actually sharing that information, right? Because everybody has an agenda. And essentially begin to build a bit of a worldview that informs the decisions that you take better. And I can tell you that, you know, the DFA channel's grown quite nicely over recent months as people are getting more uncertain about what's going on. And a lot of the feedback I get is, you know, and it's interesting observation. It's because they don't get from me, thou shalt do X, Y, Z, right? What they get is a series of ideas and some tools and some thoughts to help them grow and develop and to create their own world space and their own strategies. And I think that you'd probably share that view.
I absolutely do, because you just said the two things that I think are so important, grow and develop, but also create their own thoughts, because I'm a single mum, and when my son was quite young, I always used to say to him, don't just watch, we were living in England, don't just watch the BBC or CNN, take all the information, push it around, and let's come up and let's discuss. And the challenge we have today, Martin, is this, all this social media and all this, you know, I understand exactly what's going on in 30 seconds. No, you don't. You really need to dig a little bit deeper. And I also say to people, you've got to hedge and diversify, you know. You know me, I'm a gold nerd, you know, I do like my gold. But I would never say to anybody, sell your house and your children and go all in gold. You know, it's part of a strategy. Because everything, as you know, it's all in cycles. But I have to say, I think the cycles are completely blown out of the water at the moment with what's going on. I'm sure you'd agree. It's just...
we are in uncharted territories in so many ways. I mean, look at Jerome Powell's comments last week, right, where he basically said, well, we don't mind if inflation rages a bit because, you know, we're now going to focus on full employment. And of course, immediately the US dollar dropped and the Aussie dollar rose, and that then created its own consequences here in Australia. A huge amount of money creation and money printing around the world, frankly, repeating the lessons of a decade ago, but expecting a different outcome, which just, I scratch my head thinking, well, how does that work, you know?
Well, I don't think it does work, but I think, Martin, that they don't have too many tools left in the toy box to play with. You know, when interest rates are down to zero, and the last time that happened was, as we know, back in the 1930s, and what toys do they have to play with anymore? They don't. And, you know, we are going to have very low interest rates, I think, for potentially another decade.
Yeah. Well, and that's what the bond market is now signaling, right? So the other thing that happened after Powell's comments was the long-term bond rates, basically, you know, and therefore the yields went up. And so suddenly now they're realizing that this is a long-term sort of setting. The question is it a cul-de-sac that we can't get out of, or is there a way out? Because at the moment, I can't see the way out, unfortunately.
I tend to agree with you. Is it a cul-de-sac or is there a way out? I actually don't think there's a way out. I think that we have been pushing the can down the road for so many years. I now call paper money, fiat currency, whatever you want to call it. It's funny money. Yes. And it's interesting. I don't know if you know, but only, I think it was last Friday, the Ohio Police and Fire Pension Fund, they've actually done an allocation of 5% of the fund into gold. So I think, yeah. You know, if you've been living under a rock, you might not know, but Warren Buffett recently put $500 million into Barrick Gold, and that's just got people talking. And I find it fascinating because I've been a proponent for having an allocation to precious metals for quite some time, but everyone poo-pooed me. You know, 5 years ago, it was like tiny, and it's still a tiny part of people's asset allocation, very tiny.
So my question to you is, when it comes to gold, how do you think of it? Do you think of gold as asset protection or as an active investment or what?
How do I see gold? I see gold as one of my things is protect and grow your wealth. So I see gold as protecting my wealth, especially when you've got the amount of money printing. You know, we start off with QE1, QE2, QE3, QE to infinity and beyond.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that we are going to see inflation. We are going to continue to see the printing of money. And when you print that amount and put that amount of liquidity into the market, obviously the purchasing power is going to go down. And you can't print gold. And there's only so much gold. So I think that gold will, and people often say to me, well, gold's too expensive. I said, well, stop looking at the price. Look at gold as it relates to the funny money. So it's not going to give you a return. It's going to protect your purchasing power over the next 10 years.
Right. So you'd agree with me that it works better in an inflationary environment than in a deflationary environment, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
But I think right now, we're not seeing massive inflation.
Mm.
And I see, but it's interesting, actually, Martin, because I said about a year ago, actually, that's probably 18 months, 2 years ago now. My dad and I, and he's passed now, God bless him, he and I used to share a certain Arnott's biscuit together. And we hadn't had one for a little while. And off I went to the shops and I bought the packet. I opened up. I literally, my mouth dropped open. These biscuits that were once a decent size were one third the size. Same size packet. So it's what I call stealth inflation.
Yep.
Have you noticed that?
Oh, well, I think the real inflation is a lot higher. I see that in my survey. So almost 96% of households in my survey say real prices are higher than they were a year ago, right? So the numbers don't lie. But also, as you say, the shrinking of packaging, right? Used to be a kilogram, now it's 800 grams, then 750 grams, then 700 grams, right? Or when I was at school, I used to have something called a wagon wheel, which was a big chocolate biscuit, a massive thing. Right?
I remember wagon wheels.
Yeah. And I actually discovered one some little time ago, right? And again, it was exactly the same. I thought, well, you know, was I actually so small then that it felt bigger than it was? But no, I think they actually reduced the size of it. So I agree with you. I think there is actually, you know, a whole series of examples where things are actually just smaller. And of course, then the manufacturers say, well, that's because it's for health reasons, you know, it's less fat. Well, yeah, believe that. So it's very interesting, this debate about inflation, deflation, right? And I keep coming back to it because I think it's probably the most archetypal discussion point to have, because it will inform your investment strategy and your investment thinking and the whole, frankly, your whole philosophy about where you put your money, right? Because if you do believe that the inflation story is the one that's going to win out, then asset protection and understanding the devaluation of fiat money is so critical. If deflation is where we end up, like Japan, then there's a different strategy. The difficulty is, of course, it pulls you in two directions, right? Because effectively, investing down one lane and then finding the other lanes happening is tricky. And it's interesting, the US dollar, of course, dropped a little. The Aussie dollar rose a bit, which means that now Phil Lowe's got a problem because he's going to be importing deflation rather than inflation, right? So suddenly the idea of all of that foreign earnings being devalued because the exchange rates moved is going to have a significant impact here. So my own perspective is it's not yet completely clear as to which way we're going to go. It could go one of two ways. And of course, a lot of the money printing has gone into financial assets. It's not gone necessarily into other areas of the economy. And if wages continue to go down, right, we could have a stagflation environment. And I discussed that recently with John Adams. He's more on your side of the divide when it comes to inflation, deflation. I sit on the fence because I genuinely don't know yet. I can put arguments on both camps. So I'm tending to sort of say, well, maybe I should just wait and see how this plays out. But there are other people who have already taken the bet either way, right? Harry Dent, of course, so I've interviewed him previously, said, no, the markets are going to blow up. The Fed won't be able to save it. We're in a deflationary environment, and you know, he therefore thinks gold is going to come down. And I just think it's that there's a really fascinating debate here, right? And it's interesting that whenever I have this debate on my channel or elsewhere, I always find that it brings out the two polar views. You know, there are people
it's interesting, Martin, because I've said for quite some time now that I thought we were going to go into a deflationary period for a while because we have no velocity of money. I mean, we have. Yep. If you have a look at Victoria, is a great example. People are in lockdown. They're not going out for dinner. They're not going out for dinner and tipping the waiter who goes and buys the kebab. And, you know, people understand velocity of money is just the amount of times money changes hands. Well, it's not at the moment. Mm. You know, you'll order maybe Uber Eats, but there is no velocity of money. And so I believe that due to that, we might have short-term deflation, but longer term, we'll see an inflationary environment. And, and I think that has to happen. But how do you manage that? Well, it's what I always say. You know, don't put everything going down that path because we are in unprecedented times.
Yep.
Who would have thought? I did say a couple of years ago, something's going to come out of left field where we'll all go. Now, I didn't know it was going to be a virus, but it was going to be something that was going to change everything. Now, this isn't just changing Australia. This is globally changing. Yep. This is changing our supply chains. This is changing the way we work, the way we communicate. Everything is changing, and we just don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And that's why I often say to people, this is your time to listen, learn, get educated, and protect your wealth.
Mm. So let's just talk about diversification, right? Because in a time of uncertainty, right, particularly, diversification is pretty important, isn't it, to be able to spread the risks and to be able to essentially react to different things that are going on. So what's your rule of thumb in terms of an appropriate diversification strategy?
Oh, goodness me. Well, I'm self-taught, Martin. I really am. You know, I knew that I had to get smarter. And this is to a lot of people out there who think she'll be right, mate. It's the old Aussie adage, you know, she'll be right, mate. It'll be all okay.
Yeah, the sun's shining. We'll go to the beach and watch the footy and everything will be fine.
Yeah, I'll buy my pie and my beer. And the government's not going to look after you.
Yeah.
They're broke. So you have to look after yourself. And I do get passionate about this, Martin, because, you know, it's for me, I just say to people, you've got a brain, use it. And when you say the diversification bit, well, I personally think, and again, I know you said it, I'll say it again, I'm not a financial advisor, so please do your own research. But for me, my instinct is saying to me that the share market is very toppy. It's very bubbly. I mean, once you see people using their government stimulus checks to pop into the share market, they don't know what they're doing. That to me is a massive warning sign. There's too many people that are jumping in. It's becoming like a casino. They're not doing, and that's where I do get passionate, because I'm like, this could turn like it did in March and drop by 30%. And then you're going to get mass panic, because it's the psychology of investing. People are all going to pull out, and then you might get a 40% drop. It's like what you say with the property market as well. It's a psychological game that a lot of people play. So in terms, that's why I say to people, you know, have some money in the share market, but also have some gold, have a little bit of cash, because we just don't know what's going on. But I often say cash is trash. And, you know, real assets, Martin, real assets. I know that I love your program. I watch and listen all the time. And I love the data, and I understand. And I actually read something today about the property market here in Sydney going down, you know, 8% for units and all this sort of stuff. So it's happening. But I still like real assets. So I have some property as well. So I have property, I have gold, I have silver. But other people say to me, well, I live paycheck to paycheck. Mm. Well, go buy a silver coin. It'll cost you $50.
Got to start somewhere. Now, what about bonds? Do you ever go near them, or is that just an area you just say, nah?
I'm not. I don't dabble in that area. My thing is, I'm actually art, real estate, gold, share market, cash.
Okay. Yeah, very good. And I guess the other question I wanted to ask was, you know, for somebody who's starting out and thinking, well, you know, maybe I should think about investing, and I've not really ever done this before. What's the first couple of steps? I mean, sometimes I say the best thing to do is to just run some shadow investing for a little while and see what happens, right? So you don't risk real money. Just you know, say, well, if I'd invested in that now, see what happens, right? But what would you say in terms of the first couple of things to do?
Well, I think there's two things. One, you could go onto the ASX website, and they have a share market game where you don't have to risk any of your own money, and you can play. So that gives you your base to understand how it works. And then, you know, you can invest $500 through one of the online platforms. I mean, it is, and this is the plus, the positive and the negative to this. It's very easy to open up a share investing account. And sometimes I think it's a little bit too easy. But I think you've got to look at what's happening in the world today. Well, clearly, we have some health challenges. So I'd be looking potentially at some of the healthcare companies. But we all know that the banks have massive changes there. But is that a good time or not a good time? I would be reading a lot of the newsletters that are going on. And as I said earlier, you know, don't just look at one particular opinion. You got to read. You got to understand. And as Warren Buffett says, buy good companies undervalued.
Yep.
And he made a lot of money by doing that. Don't buy the latest gadget and widget and this one's going to the moon. Buy good companies that are undervalued.
So you would see yourself not as a trader but as an investor? There's a big difference?
Massive difference. Right. Massive difference. And I don't, there's nothing, you know, I don't have anything against traders. In fact, a very good friend of mine is an extremely successful trader. Yep. It's not for me. I am an investor. I like looking at good companies. I understand the gold industry. And, you know, again, one out of 300 will make it. So it's a very high risk strategy.
Yeah.
So you've got to understand it. And I always say to people, you've got to look at the management. If you're going into a company and you look at management and they've never done it before, in fact, last year they were selling something completely different. Run, fast, yes. run away. Yep. But if they've got a track record of good outcomes for shareholders, then I tend to follow those sorts of people.
Mm. And I actually think that's really important. It goes back to your earlier point about understanding, delving in, reading about, finding out about, rather than just saying, oh, it's gone up 5%, so it's going to go up another 5%, so I'll just take that. Now, there are people who trade that and trade it up, trade it down. I always make the point that for every trade, somebody's always losing, right? So that's the issue about that. But effectively, long-term strategic investments where you actually do the work and you identify the key characteristics of a potential positive story, right, which may or may not come out, right, and it may take time, and that's the other point that people need to understand. It doesn't always happen straight away. It's a very different environment, a different set of skills, but those are actually the ones that seem to me to make the most sense on the longer term. But you also have to be a bit patient, don't you?
I think you've got to be patient, and I think you've got to understand the psychology of the game as well. I mean, if you look back to March, when the coronavirus really started to have some challenges with this, and the market dropped by 30%, a lot of people jumped out of the market because they got scared. And then the market's back up to where it was, if not beyond. And those people now saying, oh, I shouldn't have jumped out. Well, if you bought good, strong companies and you bought them with a clear direction, then you shouldn't be jumping out. You should be averaging down and having a look at that. Because if it is a good company, it's not going to go away. But it has its challenges.
Yeah. And you've just used a very important term, which I just wanted to come to, which is the concept of averaging down. Let's just explore that a bit, because I don't think many people understand what that actually means. But it's a really, really important technique, isn't it?
Well, it is, because it's like anything you do. I mean, it comes back to the psychology. A lot of people will buy a share. Let's just make it really nice, even numbers. They buy a share at $1. It goes to $1.50. And then it drops right back to 50 cents. And that's when they freak out and they go, I'm dumping it all. It's going to go to zero. And I go, no, that's like going into a department store and saying, great, the shoes are on sale today. I'm going to buy another pair of shoes because they're half price. Because if you believe the company has good management and good assets and it's in something that you've done your research on, then there's no reason for you not to look at it and say, right, it's on sale. I'll average down and I'll buy a few more shares.
Yeah.
And again, it's the same with the gold price. Some people bought when it hit $2,000, it came back to $1,950. They're all starting to freak out. I'm like, no, just look at it as being on sale.
It is an attitude of mind. I think that's really important. Okay. Now, you may not want to answer this question, but I always ask it. What's the biggest mistake that you may have made from an investment perspective?
Oh, that's an easy one. This goes actually to property.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you two stories?
Sure.
The first one's hilarious. The first one's how I got into property. I was a single mum living in England, and it started becoming a game, and I was putting silly offers on places, and it became a game. I'd literally go in and offer £200,000 less than what it was on the market for. And one day an agent rang me and said, they've accepted your offer. I was so naive, I didn't know that I could have just walked away.
Yeah.
So I panicked and had to find, how am I going to get the money? It was the best investment I ever made because it got me in the game because I had a lot of fear, but I was so naive, I didn't know I could get away with it. So that's the first thing. Coming back to Australia, my biggest mistake was buying property and listening to those that had... they were just there to make the sale. They don't care about, anything other than they told me what I wanted to hear. I bought the BS and it has not given me any return. It's given me, okay, so I've got the rental return. It's fine. But I learned a big lesson there, which is do your own research.
Yeah. Well, you may know that one of the things I keep saying is exactly the same. You cannot rely on the professionals because all the professionals have an agenda, and particularly those who are on a commission, particularly now. And I notice the number of real estate agents that I come across who are on JobKeeper has gone higher and higher and higher. So that tells you something about the state of play in the real estate sector. And, you know, you have to do your own work. You have to become an independently objective owner of information rather than just be spoon-fed what they want to send in your direction or that you what you want to hear. And I often say to people, you need to be your own reverse advocate. In other words, you need to ask those hard questions that you know you should be asking but aren't asking, right? Because they're the ones that will almost always be the critical things to think about when it actually comes to making that final commitment. And I think the final point I'd say is, and I've made lots of mistakes too, one of my most critical ones was I'd ridden the stock up because I thought it was a really good stock and it got really high and I thought, oh, it can't go any higher, so maybe I should sell and, you know, release, and I got good profit. And then it's gone even higher and it's gotten dramatically higher. And I thought, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. I've still got that and I invested it elsewhere. But you can't always pick the top and the bottom. You can't always get it exactly right?
Yeah, it's a really good point, and it's something that I say to people. When people get, again, it comes back to the psychology. Hmm. You're not going to pick the top. Yep. You're not going to pick the bottom. Did you, like in your case, Martin, did you make some money?
Yeah, I did.
Brilliant.
And it's locked in and it's sitting in the bank. So, you know, it wasn't that I lost a lot, but it, you know, that potential. But that's the point, isn't it? You don't know that at the time you make the decision based on the information that you have at that point in time, right? And it was a logically, internally correct decision at the time. In retrospect, I could have made a bit more, but actually I could have also lost a lot because the reason I was selling it was because I felt that it had got to the point where it was probably overvalued and therefore it was worth locking in. So, but I think this idea of perfect picking the market and, you know, being able to sort of pick it on the hour, is just an illusion. I don't think it exists.
Well, you go back to the days of Poseidon Nickel when everybody was just throwing their money at this thing. It got up to $268 and then bang. And a lot of people lost a lot of money. Mm. So I see nothing wrong with, you know, taking your money off the table. Or as I say to people, if you invested $10,000 and you've made a profit of $10,000, take the $10,000 back. If you really think it's going to go higher, but you've got to protect your capital.
And I just wanted to underscore one last thing, which is this is an ongoing process, right? So you can't do a set and forget, right? Which is the other thing that I think sometimes people do. They sort of build an initial portfolio and then just sort of, you know, leave it, right? And you've just got to do a little bit of, you know, polishing and checking and just making sure, because actually that is a really important part of continuing to develop and grow, isn't it?
Well, excuse me. I think that's why the superannuation market is as big as it is. Mm. Set and forget. Mm. I put it into a share market, into a super fund, and I don't need to worry about it. Somebody else does all the work. Don't you think?
Yeah. Pay all the fees and, you know.
And that's the thing. You're going to be paying all these fees. And is that a good thing? I always think that you should be a master of your own destiny, and I don't think you should be paying all these fees. And that's a massive market. But there are people that, you know, they're busy. They've got families and they've got children, yep. They've got school, and they don't have time. Or they don't understand. And you know what, Martin? I'm finding a lot of people that I speak to have no clue about the share market, yep. No clue about gold, no clue about investing. Like, and that's the challenge. And Robert Kiyosaki says it a lot. Harry Dent says it a lot. We don't get taught in school about budgets. We don't get taught about finance. Investing. Do you know why? Because they want us to be good little soldiers and make sure that we pay our taxes and all the rest of it. Don't become an entrepreneur, because that's not good for us as a government, because we need to spend lots more money. And that's what gets me cranky. Because you know what, guys? You've got to start to just get educated. Because if you don't get educated, as Martin just said, they're going to take fees from you and you'll never get, I don't think you'll ever get ahead. That's just a view I have.
It's about empowerment and taking responsibility and taking ownership and all of those things. And it's not as scary and hard as it may first sound, because you just take one step at a time and one step at a time and on it goes. Kerry, I've enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you so much for that. Now, if people want to find out more about you and your channels, where do they go?
goldevents.com.au. I've got a little ebook on gold there. And I'll be putting a few more bits and pieces. I also have a YouTube channel, Gold and Alternative Investments. And We just recently ran a virtual gold conference, all the videos are now up on my YouTube channel from that. And we're doing another one in November, where I'll have Jim Rickards just after the US election. So that'll be pretty interesting. Little view of the US elections. And what do you think? What's going to happen there, Martin?
I have a sort of feeling in my stomach that Trump will get back.
So do I.
Could be wrong, but I personally think that he's very sassy and his team is very sassy in terms of the way he's pitched his platform, as it were. And the more you look at the other side, the more you realize that it's a carve out of an anti-Trump picture rather than actually being a positive alternative story, right? And that's just like they did 4 years ago. And I think that the other side there are just replaying the script from Barack Obama's day without actually something new.
No so strategy.
We'll see.
It's been great chatting to you, though. Thank you. And I love what you do as well. I love how you just analyze the data and be wary at the moment. Is that right, Martin, for property here?
Yes. Prices are definitely sliding, not uniformly, but be very cautious, be very careful. Don't believe all the bullshit in the mainstream. And more importantly, don't believe the government when they say that it's a great time for first-time buyers to be buying, 95% and all that. That is a trap for the unwary. But more of that in the future DFA show. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it. And let's keep chatting. I think this will be a really interesting few months as so many things are in play. And thanks for your time today.
Great to see you.
Thanks. Bye.